Escape from Cubicle 17, Episode 1. Warning, if you are currently working in a cubicle or in an office space shared with other coworkers, please put on your headphones for an important announcement. I'll wait. Sitting comfortably? Are your coworkers staring at you yet? Good. Now, on with the show. Welcome to Escape from Cubicle 17. This is a new podcast by Chris Murley, and today I have, well, actually what I'm going to do is, before I mention the name of my guest, first of all, let me start by saying that the 17 in my podcast title does not refer to NC-17. That is for mature audiences only. If anything, this podcast is for immature audiences. In keeping with that theme, my guest today is Selena Rosen. She is a publisher, a very fine writer, a part-time swashbuckler, and when she puts her mind to it, can put you in a world of hurt. So welcome to Escape from Cubicle 17, Selena.
Hello, Chris.
Okay, the mic's running a little hot here. We'll have to just tone that down a little bit because you've got such a great voice to carry.
Well, I don't have any voice right now. All I have is this croaking sound in my throat.
Well, the last time I interviewed Selena was for the Conestoga podcast when we were celebrating our triple 10 anniversaries of Yard Dog Press, Misha Merlin, and Conestoga. And, of course, I had Lynn on the podcast, and we were talking about the history of Yard Dog Press. Well, I think we should talk about Selena as a writer because she is a very fine writer, and we want to hear about what she's worked on, what she's writing, and to learn more about her. You notice I might have mentioned the triple 10 anniversary with Misha Merlin. Sadly, they have gone away.
They're dead, man.
Yeah, well, we're really sorry to see that, but we might have a few words to say about
that
later.
Nobody's as sorry as I am.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's a whole lot of stable of authors that had their books. I mean, at least you're able to get some of your books.
I had six titles with them.
Oh, my goodness.
So I got all the rights back on everything, though.
Excellent. So. Excellent. That's good. Now, let's talk about your latest novel, which I believe is Strange Robbie. Is that correct?
Strange Robbie is my latest single novel by myself.
Okay.
I have a novel that just came out in June that I wrote with Laura J. Underwood called Badlands, which is a gonzo murder mystery. And it's said that it is like CSI meets Medium on Survivor.
I'm trying to get my head around that mental image, but I might do it by the end of the podcast.
It's very funny, little bit of wild action cut type mystery thing.
And where can we find Badlands?
You can find Badlands. Badlands is published by Five Star Mystery. You can order it from any of the chains. You ought to be able to order it. I know you can get it on Amazon. If people want autographed copies, they can get them directly from me. Autographed by me. I don't have, Laura doesn't actually live with us. So there you go.
Well, we'll try not to have you lose your voice. But if you lose your voice at the convention, well, it couldn't happen at a better location.
I started this convention with no voice.
Oh, so it's coming back.
No, it's getting worse.
Oh, it's getting worse. Okay. Now, is there anything else you can tell us about Badlands?
It takes place. It really is. That is a pretty good description. It is really kind of like CSI meets Medium on Survivor. What we do is it's written a little differently than most co-authored novels, in that I write Vivian Storm and Laura J. Underwood writes Maggie Holmes, and she did the opening chapter in this one, and then I did the second one, and then so on and so forth. In first person, those characters' voices, and they don't overlap. In other words, they don't tell the same scene.
Ah, okay.
They just carry on the story from the point that the last one left it at. But you do get to see how they're different perspectives on what's happening. Maggie is a widowed forensic pathologist who's been in the business for many, many years. Vivian Storm is a psychic, a reluctant psychic, who has been working as a sketch artist for the police. And when Maggie figured out what she was doing, which was basically detecting the energy of the crime scenes and seeing the last thing that the dead saw. And so Maggie wants to go. She's been, since she retired, she's been doing a series of psychic energy at crime scene books. You know, so she did the first one. It was fairly successful. She's now working on the second one. And what drives Maggie is that there was an incident from her childhood where she saw something she could not explain at a crime scene. So Maggie wants to go to this haunted island, which has twice been the scene of violent, violent mass murder. Because she wants to check out the crime scene energy. Vivian doesn't want to go. She's very happy when the guys that own the island tell them they'd have to come up with $100,000, which she knows Maggie doesn't have. So they're not going to go. Well, then there's a show called Chicken Out, a reality television show that puts a cast of people on in different haunted places, and whoever stays there the longest wins. And so they're going to do Night Island, and she signs herself and Vivian up as contestants on the show. And so it just kind of goes from there.
Okay. Is this your first collaboration or novel-length collaboration?
It's my first novel-length collaboration. I've done several short stories. I did one with Beverly Hale. I did one with Bill Allen. I did one with Brand Whitlock. You know, so I've done short story collaborations. Right now, I'm not only working on the second book in the, you know, this one's going to be called Bad City. I'm not only working on that with Laura, but I'm also working on a novel, a time travel novel with Claudia Christian. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, hopefully that'll work out really well. So,
well, excellent. Let's talk about now. This is the most recent book, Badlands.
Badlands.
But now, recently, you of course, not that long ago, you came out with Strange Robbie.
Strange Robbie came out last year. From Misha Merlin. It's currently on the preliminary Nebula ballot, and it's on the Spectrum. It's been nominated for a Spectrum Award. So pretty excited about that. It'd be nice if the publishing house was still alive and it was getting distribution. However, you can't get copies of the book from me.
Yes, go to selenarosen.com, and there will be links in the show notes on how to get to Selena Rosen.
Yay.
And, of course, her own publishing house, Yard Dog Press. What can you tell us about Strange Robbie?
Strange Robbie is, see, me, I just think I'm writing science fiction, and then it takes somebody telling me what, you know, no, it's so and so. Well, apparently, Strange Robbie is a cross genre book, and it is, you want me to close the door?
Yeah, let's close the door, because they're going to make too much noise.
Okay, I'm going to close the door now.
Okay, I am closing the door. Okay, I'm actually closing the door now. Put down that axe, Selena.
Oh! Okay, so it's a cross-genre novel, is what I've been told. And apparently it's a real bastard, because it's science fiction, horror, mystery, action-adventure, police detective novel. But it's, you know, so it's, I like to say it's all things to all people.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. And, of course, like I said, you can, and of course, the other place you can find her books is if you see Yard Dog Press at a convention, they will have their books in stock.
Now, and we just happen to have mine.
Yeah. We're, of course, recording at Archon31/9thNASFIC/TuckerCon. And so far, I've been having a great time. This is actually my third interview, but because it's Selena Rosen, I really want to set a good tone for my new podcast. She's going to be the first one up.
Woo-woo!
So no pressure.
Well, because you do know about my major award. Right?
Oh,
we are going to talk about my major award.
Let's talk about your major award.
Let's talk about it.
Now, first of all, it's not a lamp that's in the shape of a leg.
That's right. Although I'd like to have one of those too, if anybody out there listening has one.
I've seen them for sale, but they're too expensive, and I'm not willing to pay that much for one.
There's a lot of things I'd like to have, but it's just not worth it to pay that for a gag.
Yes. Although the little USB dog that Melissa gave you was really cute, and definitely worth spending the money on. Although the USB pole dancer, just couldn't bring ourselves to spend that kind of money for one of those. And we saw that at Fry's. So you can go and get them there. They're just like, okay, whatever.
Well, some what always gets me about things like that, because, you know, of course, I have the little robotic dog that humps your leg.
Right.
And makes noise and stuff like what always gets me about that is there's a room full of executives and they're sitting around. Right?
Right.
And they're like, oh, the company's in trouble. The company's in trouble. We need something. We need something. What do we need? I know. We need a leg-humping dog. You know, call in robotics. Call the computer people. Call, you know. It's because there's more robotic technology and more computer software in that freaking dog than there were in the early home computers.
Yeah, and we all thought the Big Bath Billy Mouse, I can't even say it, the Big Billy Bass Mouth was, well, I knew a guy I worked with. He liked those kind of singing fish so much he had to have three of them in his office.
Well, and what I'm saying is, okay, like I said, you know, you always wonder about what brings people to say, okay, we will make 4 billion singing fish. It's going to make us rich. And it does. How do you know what the people want? You don't know what the people want. You ever see Laughter on 24th Floor? Or is it 25th Floor? I've slept since then. It's a Neil Simon play.
Okay.
And it talks about the early days of television.
Right.
And the Carl Reiner character runs out of his dressing room. And you know, he's like, give the people shit. The people want shit. Give them shit. Because they keep getting complaints about what they're putting on the air. This is if give them what they want.
Yeah. Well, I was doing a little research because, you know, the important thing, if you're going to interview someone, if you're writing a book and you're going to send it someplace, do your homework. The best advice that someone I talked to recently says, if you're going to approach an agent, make sure you're not drunk.
It helps, but, you know, sometimes it's easier to approach an agent when you're drunk. Just need that little ounce of courage.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, I don't care what they say, agents bite.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
Well, I guess there's good agents and there's bad agents, just like there's good writers and bad writers. And
I'm shocked.
But the thing is about bad writers is that, thankfully, most of them don't see print unless they're on the internet.
No, that's not true.
Oh.
That is, well, not true.
You get you get to see submissions all the time.
There are hugely famous, very, very rich authors that should not be allowed to write.
You mean like Dan Brown?
I'm not going to say names. I'm just saying there are usually – let's say you're a hugely famous author who writes huge tomes of books in series form – that never, ever, ever come to any conclusion.
Mm-hmm. They never.
You've written six books that are basically a vignette.
They don't. They never land the airplane.
No, it's just absurd. And there are people making a living who literally don't even know the craft, and it's all the luck of the draw.
Well, I think people ought to know a little bit about Selena's background. Now, she has a bio which she says is a little out of date on her website.
what I said was there's things that I would have been more open with now that I wasn't when I wrote it.
Well, I maybe you'll get around to rewriting it someday, but it's impressive. I mean, you literally, you know, had come up through the school of hard knocks, and you've got a background that, you know, any writer would envy.
Well, I don't know that they would envy some of the things that I've been through. But, yeah, you know, I've done things, yeah, that did seriously help your writing.
Yeah, you've done a lot of odd jobs.
Every odd job you can think of.
But it literally opened doors for you in getting your writing career started.
Yes, yes.
And who are some of the big names that helped you, that you were able to, you know, get an education from that helped you on your path to becoming a writer?
Well, you know, through the sci-fi conventions, of course, and things, you know, that go on. Ed Bryant was a great help to me early on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he told me a couple of things like, God damn it, Selena, learn to use a comma. I still don't know how, but I have other people to do that. Mercedes Lackey was a great, great help to me. You know, I built her a cedar chest. She looked at my first story. She basically line edited the story, and she sent it in to Marion Zimmer Bradley.
Wow.
And Marion bought that story. So Marion was a great big help to me. She bought my first three stories that were published. Of course, it spoiled the shit out of me because the first story that I ever published, I actually made money on. I actually made quite a bit of money on that because it resold. The first story I ever published, she rebought it for a German anthology she was putting together. And it was one of only six stories in that collection. And it was a fancy schmancy collection. And I wound up making almost $3,000 on a short story.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got royalties on that short story for 8.5 years.
It's interesting that you say about success not really teaching you anything because it's true. Yeah. I was talking about it earlier today at lunch about how certain things happen in your life and you think you're on the top of the world and then something comes along and
boom.
You know, you're back down the bottom. Yeah. It's like, what did I do wrong?
Exactly. Exactly. And well, and you know, like I said, it spoils you because then somebody say, oh, here's your advance. It's 15 cents. And you're like, 15 cents?
Yeah, don't spend it all in one place.
15 cents? I don't think so. But and then I met Carolyn Terry through Misty. And Carolyn and I became very good friends. And CJ and Jane Fanchern, and we were very, very good friends. And CJ helped me tremendously with my work. I remodeled her home, and she helped me with my work.
Sounds like you got the better end
like
of the deal.
I'm like the carpenter of the stars. I'm telling you, it's like, you know, I've done lots of construction for many people in the industry, actually.
Yeah, and there was also it looks like you had a little help in selling your first novel, which was Queen of Denial.
Queen of Denial. Lynn Abbey and Carolyn Cherry had it in the house because, like I said, CJ had helped me quite a bit. And Lynn had heard me read it in at a reading at a convention. She heard me read the first part of Queen of Denial, which at that time was actually titled Memory Lost. And so I was reading it, and Lynn was cracking up. And so when she got home and she knew that Carolyn had a copy of it, she went and got it, and she read it actually before Carolyn did. And then they were kind of reading it back and forth together. And so they ran into Stephen at some point, and they said, ask to see Selena's novel. Well, at that time, I already had it with another publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when that publisher didn't buy it, well, so Stephen called me, and he said, hey, do you get blah, blah, blah? I said, no, I have it. It's at so-and-so's. And he said, well, if they don't take it, send it to me and I'll take it. So that's how I sold Queen of Denial. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's this business really is about who you know.
Mm-hmm. I think it's more – it's and it's not sucking up to them. What it is you're finding out firsthand how they went through the process of, you know, of going through the ropes of actually, you know, being a professional.
You always, you know, when you talk to them, you find out that they all have similar stories.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, and a lot of them are, you know, convention linked because they go to conventions, mm-hmm. they meet the big authors, they learn things either watching the panels or in conversations in the bar afterwards. You learn things from the pros and then you know what to do and where to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, manuscript format is very important as well.
Yes, yes. I always tell everybody, you will, you know, go and find the guidelines. Go find the guidelines on the web. Every publisher worth their salt has guidelines up mm-hmm. on the web. Go out there, look at the guidelines. You will not be an exception to the rules just because of your brilliance. Your brilliance will not shine through even though you used pink paper and Crayola. You know, it won't. So.
Yeah. Did you ever have any submissions on pink paper and Crayola?
On purpose, because now the writers that work for me all the time, a few years ago when I read for the second Bubbas of the Apocalypse,
okay.
I had been at a panel where I was bitching about this really, really horrid submission package. In fact, when I remember, I bring it with me and I show it to people,
mm-hmm.
because it's like what you would write if you were trying to show somebody absolutely positively not what not to do
right.
in a submission package. That's what this is. So I had had that, and I was talking about it, and was like, this is exactly the kind of – know the editor, know something about the editor, blah, 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 blah. So Melanie Fletcher, who is not only one of the people that writes for me mm-hmm. on a regular basis, but is also a very good friend.
Mm-hmm.
We fenced together in the Cepho Musketeers, so we know each other quite well. She sends in her Four Bubbas of the Apocalypse story, with a cover letter that says, "Dear Miss Rosen, I know since you are a good Christian woman that you will enjoy the values that I have set forth, all the nice family values within my piece. And amen and hallelujah, yours in Christ, Melanie Fletcher." Well, of course, I'm Jewish. So it was a big joke. So, we all had a good laugh. I made the mistake of telling all the writers. And now when they send in their submissions, they do what they call pulling a Mel. Uh-huh. And they sometimes try to outdo each other with these horrible, horrible cover letters. Uh-huh. And so, yes, Rhonda Udaly sent one in color paper, in pink Crayola.
Talk about biting the hand that feeds them.
What they don't know is that I'm keeping those. I have them in a file. Yeah. And when they least expect it, I will pull them. When they're getting their Yugo,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to pull it out.
It's kind of like showing, you bring the girlfriend or boyfriend over to meet the parents. And it's like, here's their baby pictures, you know. Here's where they are when they didn't want to take a bath, running a house naked.
Yeah, they write horrible things. And one of them stuck a candy bar in the submission package because we had told the story about that. So they stuck a candy bar in there.
Now, you mentioned the CIFWA Musketeers. Now, I had the good fortune to talk to Elizabeth Moon for the Conestoga podcast, and she told me a little bit about it and how it's so you can get together and poke at each other with sharp, pointy things, and also to raise money
for the Emergency Medical Fund, the CIFWA Emergency Medical Fund.
How did you get involved in it?
How did I get? I was at ArmadilloCon. Mm-hmm. God, I don't know. Long time ago, because it was before the just before the Worldcon in Chicago, and a bunch of us were sitting around in the con suite talking. It was the first mm-hmm. time I'd ever met Elizabeth, and we were sitting there just bullshitting and talking, and somebody saw the scar on my arm, and so then of course I had to start talking about sword battles, and
right.
everybody was talking about their sword battles, and some of them were fencers, and I was a heavy weapons fighter in the uh-huh. SCA for a bazillion years. In fact, I got my arm broken fighting bastard swords, so that's that story. But at any rate, so we were talking, and Elizabeth goes, "Are you going to Worldcon?" And I said, "Yes." "Are you a member of CIFWA?" I said, "Yes." She said, "We need you for our demo. We need you for our demo." I said, "Okay." She said, "It's a fencing demo." I said, "I've never fenced before in my life." I said, "I'm a heavy weapons fighter." "Oh, if you can sword fight, you can fence."
Uh-huh.
So I said I would do it. Mm-hmm. I had never fenced in my life. I went home. I had a friend who fenced, but he was a low-level fencer.
Right.
And I took some quick lessons from him. 2 weeks later, I'm off to Chicago with borrowed gear. And I get there, and Elizabeth wants to give me some training first. So she takes me and puts me in a hotel room with Laura Underwood, mm-hmm. who is like three or four times she won the Tennessee State Fencing Championship.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. That's who she puts me in a room with, in a little bitty hotel room with low ceilings. Now, if you've ever fenced, low ceilings, not a good idea when you're fencing. But so they ran me through some drills, and I've been playing with them ever since.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I used to do
I'm sitting here wounded right now.
Yeah, well, that's the nice thing about fencing is that
bruises instead of big ones.
Instead of big ones, although I did do a little bit of side sword with real blades, and I got some nice, nasty big bruises on that.
Oh, yeah.
So
you're talking about Schlager blades?
Actually, no. These are actually real blades. They're not sharp.
They're not sharp because I was thinking, would you get a death wish?
No. Well, you could really hurt someone with them.
Oh, yeah.
But there are a number of groups that try to recreate some of the medieval and early Renaissance.
You fight with Tim?
Combat. Yeah, Tim Frazier and John Epler. I had trained with in the past. I'm kind of dropped out of
Tim's
it for a while.
Tim's the one who chipped my my elbow the first time.
Yeah. Well, Epler gave me a nice, nasty bruise across my thigh.
Yeah.
And I actually have a picture of it someplace, but I won't put it on the web.
Well, I have hematoma scars from – I'm showing you. I had hematoma scars from my hip all the way to my knee.
Well, that's the thing about people –
from heavy weapons, not from fencing. That's why I like – when I was doing heavy weapons, I always swear, "Oh, that's for weenies. I'd never do – I'm old now, and I'd much rather have those little nickel-sized bruises as the giant hematomas that leave scarring.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about people who do fighting, you know, for recreation in the SCA or whatever historical organization or Sifo Musketeers. You know, after a long day of fighting, they're sitting there kicking back, drinking a beer, and they're going, look at the bruise I got, you know.
Well, Laura and I were doing that earlier. Well, I was bitching about keeping me in my elbow, the one that Tim chipped. You want one?
Oh, sure. We are enjoying an Altoid here.
Well,
they're curiously strong.
I am severely worried about having gamer breath.
Yeah. Well, if you eat peanut butter, you don't have to worry about your breath because it stinks. Well, the first time I actually encountered Selena, heard about her, was actually in the SCA. There was a an SCA demo way back in the early 80s at the Camelot Inn in Tulsa.
Oh, God.
And someone, there's Selena. It's like, and I had no idea who half these people were, you know, and these people are already legends. Selena was already a legend by that time. And I did see her. She was in a hard suit of armor, you know. And so that was my first encounter. And then she just kept cropping up after that at conventions.
In the early in my career, the thing that used to tick me off, because I used to fight in the demos there, you know, the SCA demos, and in armor. So I'd be there trying to push my work and trying to get ahead in the business and everything. And everybody, you know, none of the news people wanted to talk to me. None of the radio people wanted
right.
to. So I'd get ready to put on the armor, and here would come the TV cameras. I started telling people, I'm just going to put it right on my tabard. I'm going to put on it. Oh. I write books by my.
Well, I don't know if you remember this. At that Camelot that weekend, there was also a Knights of Columbus convention.
Oh, my God.
And
I remember.
Yeah. So I don't know. But all I remember was, of course, I was dressed in, you know, the funny clothes of the SCA. And we were going across the street to eat lunch. And there was a Knights of Columbus family. The father was dressed in his little cape, his little admiral hat. And the kid's pointing at us. He's pointing at us wearing our, you know, our tunics, and he's going, look at the people in the funny clothes. And I'm going, like, have you looked at your dad lately?
Yeah, really? You know, talk about the pot calling the kettle black.
Well, I think, you know, we're going to kind of pull forward again back into the present. And, you know, there is a lot of overlap between organizations. You know, there's the SCA, there's Fandom, the Scottish thing, it's amazing the people that you come across at these events.
Oh yeah, it's everybody's at a sci-fi convention. It really is a melting pot.
And the really unique thing about Fandom is that you know, the fans, they put on the convention so they can bring in the authors so that we can meet them, and it really is a wonderful service. And you just get to meet all sorts of wonderful people. Some of them are a little odd, but then again, I think we're all a little odd at these, you know, for continuing to do this, but we love it.
Well, I think everybody, you know, when they come together here, I think the greatest thing about Fandom is, yeah, there's the occasional little going on, you know, that always happens whenever groups mingle. But for the most part, it's a very tolerant group of people. You've got all these very different people, some of them way up in the echelons of the business, all the way down to the lowliest of the lowly fans, you know, gamers. And everybody basically gets along. You know, everybody has their place in this society, and we all get along. And there isn't a whole lot of infighting and bullshit. You know, I think that's a great thing about Fandom.
Yeah,
it's a place for everybody. It's the one place where people don't get singled out and thrown aside.
That's true. I know there's the occasional person that's like, please go take a bath and come back and we'll welcome you, you know.
Yes, exactly.
But for the most part, they are a very tolerant bunch.
Yeah, yeah. I like to call them the unwashed masses.
You know, earlier we were talking about the triple 10 anniversaries of Conestoga, Misha Merlin, and Yard Dog Press. And, you know, we talked extensively about Yard Dog Press in that previous podcast, so go listen to it. And so we don't need to necessarily cover the same ground, but in that year since you celebrated your 10th anniversary, how has Yard Dog Press been doing?
Yard Dog Press has had the most phenomenal year of the press's life. Our sales have increased. More people know who we are. We just did a book with Robin Wayne Bailey, a collection of his short science fiction called Turn Left Till Tomorrow. Yes, he's got a picture of it on there. It has a cover art by Andrew Probst. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. It's, you know, Robin's a fantastic writer. There's not a dog in this collection. It's a really nice, firm collection. I'm very happy with it. And we just did a book with Claudia Christian, which is an autobiography of her life, in which she tells things I don't think I would have told. But it's extremely funny. She's extremely funny. She's a survivor. She's, you know, she's fought the hard fight to stay where she's at. She is brilliant. She's a fantastic storyteller and writer. It's great. It's called My Life with Geeks and Freaks. And so we did that, and that has done spectacularly for us. So we're looking to do a lot more stuff like that. We're doing a double dog that'll come out in September sometime. We're doing a double dog with Laura J. Underwood and Melanie Fletcher. That's going to be great. If you don't know what those are, they're like the old ace doubles. There's one short novel on one side, flip it over, there's another short novel on the other side. Laura's is a pirate tale called The Lunary Mask, and the other one is called Saber Dance. It's a palace intrigue kind of story with a belly dancer who's, well, actually it's a sword fighter, so... slash belly dancer, so it's very funny. Both pieces have quite a bit of humor in them, but they're good fantasy pieces that stand up.
And what is the latest title in the Bubbaverse that has come out?
Houston, we've got Bubbles. Bubbles.
Bubbas.
Houston, we've got Bubbas. It just came out, and it's got fantastic writers like Mel Tatum and myself and Susan Satterfield, you know, Bill Allen, whose Bubba stuff is always brilliant. You know, we have a lot of new people, a lot of old people. I mean, Dayton Ward did a piece for this. It's great. You know, so it's. I think that this one's probably the best one yet. And it's got a more science fiction twist.
So until the next Bubbaverse novel, collection comes out, this is the one to get.
This is the one to get. If you don't have it yet, you need to get it. Because it's hysterical.
Well, Selena, let's you know, Conestoga's still around, Yard Dog Press is still around, but sadly, Misha Merlin has bit the big one, and it went bye bye.
Yes.
And but fortunately, you know, you had six novels with them.
I had six novels with them, and I have all my rights back.
That's excellent.
So, I'm really not talking about it too much, and not going to get into it because I don't have contracts yet.
Right.
But it looks like that. The Chain series and the Drusilla Quay series will be picked up on the electronic rights by a rather large company. So that's pretty exciting news, and I'll tell everybody about that when I have contracts. I am really, really kind of superstitious, and unless I have a signed contract in my hand, I don't like to talk about stuff because then later on people are going, hey, that blew up on your face, didn't it? But this deal will include the ever-elusive Misha Merlin Never Did Get Around to Printing It, third book in the Chain series, Chains Excellent. Of Redemption, which a lot of you, I know, have been waiting for. So
yeah, I know that can be that's a hazard with not just small publishers, even big press, is that a series can, well, the publisher goes away and, you know, you've already got two books out. Why would they pick up the third book?
Exactly. Well, getting a new publisher, that's why we're electronic rights, because publishers don't want to do reprints. They really don't. Unless it was an extremely successful book, they don't want to do reprints. So, yeah, it's a tough place to be as an author.
Yeah.
To have that many books with somebody. But that's life. Yeah. You rolls the dice, you takes what you gets.
Yeah. Well, Selena, this has been a wonderful conversation, and I appreciate you joining me on Escape from Cubicle 17.
Yay!
Okay, that's a wrap.
Okay, thanks. Thank you very much.
www.balticonpodcast.org
Let the Balticon Podcast take you inside the minds of the people who make science fiction happen. Get the scoop on what's happening in science fiction from authors, techies, and scientists. We guarantee that you'll be entertained and enlightened.
The Balticon Podcast, Great interviews with the people who make science fiction happen. Authors, fans, and honest-to-God scientists. And we play music at the end. Search for Balticon in iTunes or visit us at www.balticonpodcast.org.
Does this podcast really need an outro? Especially since I didn't do a proper intro? Yeah, I do. I interviewed Selena Rosen at Archon31/NASFIC, North American Science Fiction Convention/TuckerCon, on August 4th, 2007. Selena was a real trooper. She didn't have much of a voice when she arrived at the con, and she had almost no voice during the convention, so I really appreciate the time she took to speak with me. I have two more interviews recorded at Archon 31. I had a great chat with Agent Joshua Belmas and a wonderful conversation with author Rachel Kane. I won't say which one is next up, so you'll just have to listen. And so I now return you to your regularly scheduled cubicle, because science fiction isn't just about escape, it's about seeing the world differently.